You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on chumbacasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hi, and welcome to The Compass, the podcast documenting the struggles of life as an artist. I'm Leah Walsh. My guest today is Chanel Da Silva. Chanel is an incredible dancer. We were at Juilliard together, where I loved watching her work. After graduation, she was dancing with dance companies outside of New York City for many years, but is now back freelancing and involved in so many cool things. She is a dancer, choreographer, teacher, and co-founder of a new organization called Move NYC, which I'm very excited for you all to hear about. I hope you enjoy the 23rd episode of The Compass. Well, I'm so happy to be talking with you, Chanel. Thank you. So what is the dark side for you as an artist, and how do you try to keep yourself from going there?
Man, recently the dark side has been this place of this looming question, am I a good dancer?
Mm-hmm.
And I've never had that question. You know, I've of course we've all dealt with self-doubt. I've dealt with it my entire training, but I've never questioned whether or not I was a good dancer. And when I came back to New York after living in Idaho for 6 years and dancing the Trey McIntyre Project, where I was very celebrated mm-hmm. and toured the world and toured the country and danced mostly leads in Trey's pieces, I came to New York and it was slapping me around. I wasn't getting hired. I was going on audition after audition after audition and not getting it. And I wasn't used to that. And I started to hear this, like, really terrible question of, am I a good dancer? Because I started to doubt whether or not I was a good dancer. Or, you know, I wasn't getting anything. And, you know, the rational Chanel knows that that's not the right question to ask yourself. But the irrational Chanel, the egotistical Chanel, the one whose identity and self-worth is tied up in her career as a dancer and being on stage, questioned that immensely.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was the dark side for me. I was waking up to that question every morning and it was not good. I was in this blah place where I was depressed and I didn't really have a will to do anything.
Yeah.
And I had never really felt that before. And so I was trying to figure out how to combat that. And I knew then that I was going to have to start making opportunities for myself. And, you know, maybe today that doesn't mean that I'm actually physically dancing, but if I'm a part of the performing arts in some kind of way, shape, or fashion, whether that's making dance happen for other people or choreographing dance,
mm-hmm.
Then my purpose is still being fulfilled.
So you came back to New York, what was it, 3 years ago?
Almost two years ago. Came back in 2014.
Yeah. But did you go to Idaho right after you graduated from Juilliard?
Yeah.
So you were working nonstop there for a while.
Yes. Going 6 years straight with one choreographer, which was fantastic. But I was yearning to do different types of things. I was yearning for the freelance life, which is the irony that kills me. Like, I was talking to myself saying, man, I wish I could just, like, do a whole bunch of projects and jump around. And I'm kind of tired of the monotony of the day-to-day and knowing my schedule. And then I got here.
And you're like, ooh. Oh, you know, I ran into another friend of ours who's in a Broadway show right now, and he mentioned something along the same lines, where he was like, oh, I told him about some project I was doing. He said, that sounds so interesting. I'm loving the stability of this job, but I'm itching for the variety. Mm-hmm. And it's so funny how you, like, you get what you want, and then you're like, oh, wait, the grass looks greener over there.
It's so true. It's so true. And I'll say this to kind of juxtaposition of the dark side. I've never felt more alive than I do right now. Like, I am a mad woman. I am running 8 different places in a day. You know, I'm working 3 jobs. Mm-hmm. I'm teaching. I'm building an organization. I'm choreographing. I'm trying to dance as much as possible. And I get very little sleep, but I feel alive. I feel like I'm constantly on fire. I'm bubbling. I have inspiration everywhere I turn. Yes, I'm crying all the time, but, like, that's great. Like, it's a really weird thing. I'm also about to turn 30, so I think there's a whole lot.
Yeah, there's some transitions going on.
Yeah. Saturn return is, like, going crazy. But I think that's a part of the dark side. Like, you know, I'm not stable. My life is unpredictable.
But you're also not stagnant.
But I'm not stagnant. Yeah. I haven't plateaued. Like, I'm constantly searching. And that is what I was yearning for.
That's good.
So
what was that, like, over the past 2 years? Like, when did those first little bubbles of, oh, I need to do something tangible start happening? When you came back and you were not getting the kinds of work that you wanted, when did you start figuring out, like, okay, I need to start something on my own?
Yeah, I got back to New York July of 2014. And actually, right when I got back, I was working with Laura Lubavitch, which was fantastic. Mm-hmm. Went right into, like, an 8-week project with him. But after that, we just kind of had a break for a while. And I remember specifically January of 2015, I was trying to hold out, like, not get a real job, hold out so I could audition every day and wait for a job that I really wanted to be a part of. And I was just waking up every day purposeless. Like,
yeah.
I guess today maybe I'll go shopping or something. Like,
that feeling of waiting around.
Yeah. I mean, It didn't anger me. It just depressed me. It was somewhere around, like, March of 2014, around when I turned, like, 29, that I was like, okay, you know what? For one, I need to get a real job because I need to support myself. But then also, like, what else can I do? Like, I need to teach. I need to be a part of something. And so I started teaching randomly and, like, posting it to Facebook, letting people know I was an educator. And then Nigel and I, of course, were starting Move NYC, so we were still just in, like, the seedling phases of it. So now we're really moving it forward.
Yeah, we'll talk about that too.
Yeah. But then it was in June of 2015, the chairman of the department at LaGuardia High School called me, and she said,
which is where you went to school for high school.
Yeah, that's my alma mater. And she called me. She said, Chanel, we have a position open. I want you to come in and teach freshman Graham. Which at first I was very, very, very tentative about taking, because it's, you know, I love Graham. I grew up on it, but I didn't know if I wanted to teach it and to freshmen. But also, you know, there's this idea in the dance world that if you start teaching, you're kind of done with your career.
Right.
And I'm not done. I'm not in any shape, way, or form. I have so much more to say as a dancer.
Yeah.
But I didn't want people to think, like, oh, wow, so she's, you know, she's
you're doing that now.
She's teaching now. And so there goes my ego again.
Is that preconception something, like, if you're teaching full-time, like, at a school like that? Or because people still, like, they teach workshops. I mean, that stereotype of, oh, you're starting to teach.
Yeah.
People who teach at studios and stuff, is that the perception of them too?
Kind of.
Yeah.
You know? I'm not a spring chicken anymore, but I'm certainly not an old dancer. But I'm in that phase in life where people are like, okay, well, what's next?
Right.
Sort of. And now that I'm taking on sort of a full-time looking job, people are like, oh, she teaches now.
Mm.
You know what I mean? I'm not out here, you know, pounding the pavement trying to audition as much. I am, but it doesn't look that way. So, but, you know, Laura Lubavitch said something really beautiful to me when I came to him. I said, Laura, I'm scared. I don't know that I should take this job. I feel like I'm succumbing to this comfortability of, like, I can't find a job, so I'll teach. And he says, Chanel, LaGuardia is just someplace where you will hang your hat for a while. If you're not done dancing, then you're not done dancing. It is a place to hang your hat. And when you're ready, you pick that hat up and you go on your way. It was the best piece of advice to calm my spirit he could have ever given me. It took so much weight away. Like, I don't have to hold myself to some sort of standard. I'm teaching now, and that's great.
Yeah.
It does not mean I'm not going to dance. Now, it does mean I need to stay in class. I need to stay in shape. But, you know.
It doesn't mean you have to teach there for 10 years.
No.
Yeah.
So that was a struggle, and he helped me with that.
How has taking that teaching job affected your other day jobs? Are you still working at the restaurant, too?
Mm-hmm. I work at the restaurant in the evening hours, late evening hours, which, you know, is hard when you got to get up and teach in the morning the next day. But it doesn't conflict so much. It does. Teaching in the morning and working at night sort of conflicts with auditioning.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, now I find that if it's an 11 a.m. audition, I can't really go. But if it's 2 p.m., I can go. You know?
Right.
So I kind of have to pick and choose which auditions I'm actually going to show up at. And if it's an open call, then I have to get there super early because mm-hmm. I'm not an equity dancer yet. So, you know, it's a lot of things. A lot of juggling. but I'm trying. I'm trying my best to be in 8 different places at once.
What's it like being around those freshmen in high school?
You know,
that's so young.
I came in thinking, man, I'm going to change their lives, you know, which is like, I have so much to give them. I have so much to teach them. In December, I realized that they have actually taught me everything, you know, about curiosity, learning something for the first time, reimagining the Graham technique, you know, what does it mean to be hungry?
Mm-hmm.
What does it mean to not take this moment for granted?
Yeah, because that's such a competitive school. Like, they want to be there.
Yeah, yeah. But then you get there and you get complacent because you're one of the best. You're at LaGuardia High School.
Yeah.
I'm here now. I don't have to work hard. No, you have to work hard.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, they push me to be a better artist every day, you know, especially when I'm speaking to them. I'm careful about what I say. What do I want to pass on to them? And then I challenge myself to take my own advice.
You're like, oh, I just heard that come out of my mouth.
Exactly. You know, I tell them not to be dowdy and to own their space, and I go to the audition and I'm standing in the back.
Right.
Hmm.
You're like, okay.
You know, so, yeah, it's been incredible. It's been incredible, and I feel like I'm supposed to be there. You know, there's something that I can offer, but there's also a lot for me to be learning in this period in my life.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been great. It's been great. I love teaching. I feel like it's another calling, you know? And maybe that's what this part of my life is supposed to be, just like fostering a different calling. Like, you are a dancer. You've done that. Even if it was for one company, you did it. You toured the world. You did exactly what you said you were going to do when you were a little girl, you know, which was to dance, get paid for it, and see the world. Those three things.
Amazing.
So I technically did that, and now I'm fostering this other calling, which is education, which I feel very passionate about.
Yeah. So tell me a little bit about Move NYC, because that's your new venture with your best friend, which I also think is amazing that you guys are building mm-hmm. something together.
Yes, I'm building Move NYC with Nigel Campbell. He and I have been best friends since we were 13.
Oh, my gosh.
Been to the same church, the same dance studio in Brooklyn, LaGuardia together, Juilliard together. And he and I have been separated for 7 years now because he went to dance in Europe and Chicago, and I was in Idaho. And now we're back, and I said the other day that
better than ever.
I know, right? Dynamic duo. They call us Shanigel.
I love it.
I was in Sweden and I said, Nigel, what if we need to give back to our community? Like, what can we do? And, you know, what can we do?
Mm-hmm.
So we decided to give back to the dance community and to do that via the training. And so Move NYC is a 3-week summer dance intensive, and we're hosting it August 8th to the 27th at the Gibney Dance Center, 280 Broadway. And it is a rigorous dance education exclusively geared toward New York City teenagers ages 13 to 18. And we're training them in ballet, contemporary, repertory, improvisation, jazz, and yoga, career management, guest panel discussions, and leadership seminars so that they can be broad
mm-hmm.
artists. You know, Nigel and I find that a lot of dance training, even when we were growing up, is about training the physical. And you didn't really train the mind, so that you let us out into the world at 18 and we're just these amazing dance robots that don't know how to send an email.
Yeah. Well, and like, if you do get lucky enough to be in a company for a while, then you have, you know, you have someone else kind of guiding the way. But then when you come to the point where you're freelancing, which is the majority of people in acting or in dance, like, then you have to have those skills, and it is something that I feel like education overlooks a lot of times. So like how do you create your own work and something that's going to feed you and communicate with other, send emails, communicate with other people.
Exactly.
That's great.
Yeah, so we want to give that to our young people before they turn 21 or 22 when they're leaving college or even 18.
Mm-hmm.
Some people are doing a full career at 18.
Yeah. Do you already have all of your teachers and stuff lined up, or are you still working on it?
Still working on that, you know.
I know it's hard to plan ahead when
exactly.
you're
and all of our friends are
artists.
Also freelance artists, so they're like,
I don't know,
like 2 months.
Yeah, what I'll be doing in August.
Exactly. So it's kind of hard to nail people down, but most people are like, yeah, everybody is on board.
Yeah.
So when we call on them, they're like, yes, I want to do it, but like, they don't know exactly if they can do it.
Or how they can help.
Or how they can help. Yeah, so a lot of people want to volunteer, and so we're just asking for help any way we can get it, you know, more hands on deck, the better. But yeah, we need to nail down our teachers. That's something we probably need to do.
But the most amazing thing about this to me is that you're trying to offer it completely free,
mm-hmm.
Which since I had the pleasure of coming to your launch party or whatever it was for Move NYC and hear you guys speak about it and how important that was, because a lot of dance training is so expensive and becomes about your parents' income level, basically, when you're young.
Mm-hmm.
But that also brings a really heavy weight on you guys to bring the fundraising, which is such a feat to tackle. So how, that's not like the creative getting in the classroom part of it. How has that been so far?
Exactly. Nigel and I just spoke about this. We have spent so much time actually trying to figure out how this program is going to function financially that we have gotten so far from what we're actually going to teach these children.
Right.
So
we still have time, but
we're going to get back to that. But you know, because that's the fun stuff. That's the stuff we know how to do. But actually, Leah, you know, so many people believe in Move NYC and the vision for it and the mission that we've actually raised close to 2/3 now.
Oh my gosh!
Fundraising goal. At our event, Mix Mingle and Move NYC, we raised over $7,000.
That's amazing.
That's incredible. We're so humbled and honored that, you know, people believe in it and they understand the necessity. And honestly, it's a lot to get this money together, but I believe that these talented young people are worth it. They're worth it. They're totally worth it. If we can offer it to, like, you know, the next Misty Copeland,
mm-hmm.
the next Mikhail Baryshnikov, who knows, you know, like, to say that we found that gem and helped them on the path to their success, that's it for me. Like, that's my legacy. So it's totally worth it for me. Like, I will, you know, I will, we're not supposed to say this out loud, but I will teach for free. I will direct for free.
Mm-hmm.
It means that much to me that young people are going to have the opportunity, because I didn't have that opportunity.
Yeah.
And I still made it, you know, with lots of help from people and my mother.
Mm-hmm.
But it just, it boggles me that things are so expensive, and the understanding that the need for the arts to be cultivated at a young age is just kind of like
disappearing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and so Nigel and I are like, no. How do we pull that back to the center?
Yeah.
So
it hasn't been too overwhelming dealing with that side of it.
It hasn't been. I mean, Nigel and I have been busting our asses, like,
yeah.
You know, emails. Lots of emails, you know, social media. All right, gotta talk to this person. Okay, we need marketing materials. Like, okay, how do we do that? Okay, what are we gonna
right.
do? Okay, we need a trailer. Okay, how
so
do
you're
do
learning
that?
All sorts of new stuff.
Yeah, I built our website. You know what I mean? And that's what I mean. Going back to that question you were talking about, when I felt purposeless at the beginning of 2015. You know, now I'm not necessarily dancing, but when I'm at Starbucks and I'm building our website, gosh, I'm on fire.
Yeah, and you get to see the result.
Yeah,
end. That's wonderful.
You know,
and it's only
so
a year later. That's incredible.
Oh, yeah.
For dancers, it's so intense that you have to stay in such physical shape. You like you just can't
mm-hmm.
lay your instrument down. You know, you have to be
yeah.
working all the time. I'm not exactly sure what my question is, but how does that give you any structure to your life that is helpful in keeping you motivated? Like, oh, I don't have an audition to go to today, but I can go to the gym or I can go to a class. And like, does that give your life shape?
It does,
in a way?
Actually. It does. And when I was really depressed, I also, you know, someone said to me at that point, they were like, when's the last time you took class?
Yeah.
When's the last time you actually moved your body? When's the last time you picked up your instrument?
Mm-hmm.
And I realized at that moment, I had not picked up my instrument in maybe 6 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
I had gone to the gym. I did my little treadmill. But I had not picked up my instrument and fed my artistic soul in 6 weeks. And that was the first time in my life where I realized, for good and for bad, that my happiness was tied to my artistry.
Yeah.
Tied to my dancing. And it kind of scared me because, like, when I can't dance anymore, what am I going to do?
Right.
You know, when I get to, like, you know, 50-something.
I guess there's a difference. Like, that is the dangerous part with the dark side, is, like, when you tie it to your art and commerce in an unhealthy way. Like, if someone else isn't paying you to do your art, then your happiness is, like, down in the dumps.
Yeah.
I guess the challenge is to try to keep that tie healthy, where it's just tied to, like, if I can move for myself, if I can dance with friends, or if I can act with friends, like, then my happiness is still in my control, and not just if some casting director recognized it or not, you know?
Exactly.
But it's easy to do that sometimes.
Yeah, it was a good learning experience for me, because I've been dancing since I was three.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
I mean, my everything, my happiness, my self-worth is tethered to dance. And I realized that was a really good thing and a really bad thing at the same time. But now I know, like, I know when I'm hungry to move. I know it. Because then I'll just be like, okay, I have to go to class today. Nothing else matters.
Mm-hmm.
I have to pick up my instrument today. Whether or not I'm falling out of my pirouettes or if I'm a hot mess, like, I was in class with other like-minded individuals. Sort of like church.
Yeah.
You know, like, when
it's a practice.
Yeah, it's a practice. I treat it very, it's very sacred to me. You know, when I'm feeling like I need to connect, I go take class. And then I walk out, I'm sweaty, you know, maybe my foot hurts, but I feel really great. And I'm like, okay, great, I took class today. Now I can, like, go do this website. You know, it's like a, I don't know, it's weird. It's weird, I need it. So I realize, like, I'm going to have to do it for the rest of my life, whatever that means, in whatever capacity I can do it, whether I'm just taking half the class,
mm-hmm.
I'm going to have to move around.
That makes me want to go out and meet some older dancers and see how they,
oh, yeah,
what they do in their 80s, you know.
I don't want to be one of those,
I'm
crazy
curious.
Dancers of the 80s, though.
Not, I didn't say crazy, but
because they are, Leah.
But how they fulfill that desire, you know.
Yeah, I mean, some age. Of my mentors, you know, like some of my teachers at Juilliard are still in class,
mm-hmm.
you know, and they're not crazy. They're just like, this is my art.
Yeah, your meditation. And
yeah, you know, but then there's the ones who are like trying to hop around on their pointe shoes at 85, and I'm like,
you got to save your hip at that point.
Yeah, right.
Just
you
save
know,
it.
It's okay. But yeah, that was a great learning lesson for me. Just what my art actually means to me, and then how, like you said, what is the healthy side of that, and what's the unhealthy side of that?
Yeah,
because the unhealthy side goes to my dark side, which is like, you're not a good dancer,
mm-hmm.
you're not fulfilling your dreams, and no one else said that to me. No one else said it. It was Chanel talking to Chanel like that, and
yeah.
I realized how egotistical I was. It was mind blowing, because I don't think of myself as egotistical, like.
Right.
Chest higher than thou. Like, no, but like, I have a standard that I've set for myself,
mm-hmm.
that I didn't even realize. And when I wasn't holding my, when I wasn't to that standard, I was talking to myself. I was demeaning myself.
Mm.
It was crazy. I was like, I'm egotistical. My ego. Like, I need to check my ego. I need to be kind to myself.
Yeah. It's really easy to beat up on yourself.
It was scary.
You know, sometimes if I'm in that place, which I said something very similar. I was aware of it, but I said something very similar to someone yesterday. I was like, sometimes I'm having this imposter syndrome, and sometimes I'll be like, am I a good actor? Even though, obviously, like, we've all had the training and done the work, and we know we can do it, but those moments when you really go to the self-doubt, and you're like, am I? Is the world trying to tell me that I can't do this? And every once in a while, if I voice one of those things, Frankie will be like, be nice to my wife. I'm like, you're right. I need to be more kind to myself.
That's amazing. That's amazing.
Yeah,
yes,
it's really sweet. It's really sweet. So how did you start dancing when you were three? Was that something that you were... It was just obvious that you needed to do, or did your mom put you in it, or?
Yeah, apparently the story is that I looked up at a poster and I said, I want to do that. and my grandmother, actually, who was a huge lover of dance.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay.
Aww.
Well, let's put you in a dance school. And apparently I cried. The third one said, okay, if you cry this time, you're not going back. And I...
You pulled it together.
Stayed in class, and the rest is history. That was at 3, and I've never done another hobby. It's only been dance.
Single focus. Has your family always supported that decision when you decided that you're like, I'm going to do this, not just as a hobby, but as a profession?
Well, sort of. Mm-hmm. My mom was very, you know, as most parents are, very, you know, what's the word I'm looking for? Not trepidatious, but like...
Concerned
about the performing arts career. You know, for her, it wasn't stable, which... Thinking about
fair.
It now, I'm like, okay, to the point.
Not always stable.
Not always,
but you had a lot of stability there for a long time.
I knew people who had stability.
Yeah,
I knew several of my mentors who were doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I told my mom I was going to audition for Juilliard. And, you know, I was like, Mom, I'm going to do this. And she said, baby, why don't you just, like, go to school for business? Or, like, you like to do hair. Like, why don't you go to cosmetology school? And I was like, those don't make me happy.
Yeah.
So... I started busting my butt, like, class all the time, class after school, rehearsal, in preparation for Juilliard's audition. And I got into Juilliard, and I came back, well, before I auditioned, I said, Mom, I'm going to audition for Juilliard. And she said, don't you have to be good to get into Juilliard? And I don't think she meant it, like that, but I was like, yeah.
She kind of meant, like, that's, like, one of the top, the top school, right?
Yeah, and I said, well, yes, you do have to be good, and So I'm gonna audition, and I got in, and I brought the letter home to her. I said, "Look, I got in," and she was like, "Okay, all right. Well, let's do this." And she, you know, after that, I mean, she was totally on board. But I think for her, it was like, I, you know, I'm a mom. I'm biased. I think my kid's good, but like, how does she compare?
Right.
Her kids?
How do
like,
don't have a perspective on that?
Yeah. So after that, my whole family's been super supportive. You
That's
know, they
great.
Watched me go through Juilliard. They watched me tour the world and the country, and they're like, Chanel, you're doing it. Like, my aunts and my cousins remember when I was 3.
Yeah.
And I was in my little recitals. They remember that. So to see me now, they're like, that's incredible, Chanel. You've
wonderful.
Done it. So they've been awesome.
Did any of them ever make it out to Idaho to visit when you were out there?
No. Not one single family member came. Nigel's skidding at the end.
Really? Just barely?
Really,
well, he was in another country there for a while.
He was in Chicago.
Oh, in Chicago with that.
And,
okay.
You know, but
that's
the last week of my time in Boise, I had a going away party, and Nigel came for like the last 3 days of my time in Boise. He made it. But no, my family, I think, you know, for people who don't have people out west,
mm-hmm.
they're like, first of all, it's Boise, Idaho.
Right. And it's interesting, like, because I grew up in Michigan and then I came to New York, but mm-hmm. you're born and raised here.
Yeah, born and raised here. My family's from the South,
yeah.
North Carolina. They're like, well, what's in Idaho? I said, well, I'm there.
I think that's the draw.
Yeah, also, like, Boise's a cute city. You know, Boise's actually a really little, it's a gem.
Yeah.
I grew to love it. And the city actually has a lot to offer. I can show you, like, outdoorsy stuff. And they were like, well, you know, we'll get out there sometime.
Why did Trey decide to base his company there?
Oh, it was a brilliant idea. Before he became a full-time company, he had a sort of a summer project,
mm-hmm.
and they toured to Boise a couple of times because he had a friend who lived there, and they were so welcomed and celebrated by the Boise audience that when it came time for Trey and John Michael, who was the executive director at the time, to choose a home base, you know, of course they could have been in New York, of course they could have been in San Francisco, or Houston. You know, they had people who were offering them million-dollar offers to base in these big cities. And they both said, you know what, why would I make another arts organization in the middle of a recession, 2008,
ugh.
In the arts mecca of the world? Why not go to a city and an environment who are yearning for more cultivation in the arts?
Mm-hmm.
And
where you can afford to have a company.
And my dancers can live easily and cost-effectively. They said, what about Boise? And they moved to Boise, Idaho, and, you know, they got so much slack for it. They were like, you guys, this is going to be the death of your dance company. You're committing artistic suicide. Boise, Idaho, what?
Hmm.
And it was the most brilliant idea they had, because not only were we, like, recognized for starting critically acclaimed dance company in Boise, Idaho, but the fact that Boise was behind us, they treated us like celebrities. The New York Times did like 3 articles on us over the course of 6 years, full spreads.
Yeah.
Just on this new idea of bringing arts to, I don't want to say an underserved, but an unlikely community, you know? So it was brilliant. Brilliant. Very brave, but brilliant.
And what was, like, besides the auditioning and stuff when you came back to New York, since you've been back, do you kind of feel like, oh yeah, this is my home and my home base will always be New York? Or since spending all that time away, do you kind of feel like, oh, you know, I'll be here for a bit and then maybe I'll try somewhere else again?
It's kind of the latter. I don't know.
I know that the work could take you anywhere, but if you had your choice.
If I had my choice, I love New York City. I love that I grew up here. I love the melting pot that it is. I don't always feel like it's a sustainable life.
Yeah.
To live. I wish that it wasn't so expensive. I wish that I could see building a family here for real.
Yeah.
You know, those are things I think about. Will I always be tied to it? Absolutely. Now that we've built Mobile NYC, I think it should always be New York City based. I'm a New York City native. I will always be tied to New York, but I don't know that I will always live here. Especially now that I've lived somewhere else and I know what I can get for my money and I know what quiet sounds like and I know what fresh air smells like. Now that I know that and I lived it for 6 years, you know.
Yeah.
But I love New York. I love how I'm always on fire, literally. but I just wonder if that's sustainable.
Yeah.
So I can't predict the future, but I wouldn't be surprised if I ended up in like a neighboring city.
Where you can have a little bit of space.
A little bit of space, maybe a front yard.
I know, it is scary how, the city always goes through fluxes and changes, but we were in our neighborhood in Astoria and we had to buy like a chest of drawers for our apartment and this place was moving. Mm-hmm. They were like, yeah, this whole building got bought because it's going to be, you know, new fancy apartments and this whole section, the next couple of blocks down here by Astoria Kaufman Studios is going to be like Long Island City. And I was like, oh, because I love our little neighborhood. I'm like, those feelings of being like, am I going to be priced out of my what you now consider your home, like how far out am I going to have to move to still live in New York, be in New York City? We'll see. There has to be a way to make it easier for artists.
That's what I'm saying.
It gets so expensive.
Like when is the cap of like, okay, rent can't get any higher than this?
Right.
I don't know if there is, especially now that all these high rises are just...
Because I feel like the city would be really boring if all the artists left for everyone else who stays. I feel like they get bored really quickly.
It's true. The culture is going to go like that. Price us out. We have to leave. Where's the culture of that neighborhood anymore?
We'll all be in Boise.
Right?
Yeah.
Listen.
So you said you've been choreographing some too?
Yeah.
Do you enjoy that?
I love choreographing. I choreographed quite a bit in college, and then when you leave school, it's a little hard to find studio space and find dancers and find the time to choreograph. But I've been choreographing quite a bit over the last 8 years, but more so these last 2 years. I just did a piece on Harvard Dance Company. I'm doing a piece this spring on LaGuardia Senior Dance Concert. And where else have I choreographed? Oh, man. Brooklyn High School for the Arts. I've made pieces out in Idaho for Idaho Dance Theater. Studios all over the country. I've been choreographing. I need to sort of start documenting my work. I've just been kind of doing it as like freelance work, and I'm realizing that I really love doing it.
To have like a portfolio.
I like choreographing. It's one of the more scary things that I do.
Yeah.
Like dance doesn't scare me anymore. I mean, it exhilarates me, but I'm not afraid. And to teach, I'm not afraid either, but choreography, I feel, challenges me. It's like, you know, that saying, like, do something every day that scares you. So I want to start choreographing more so I can get less tentative in the studio. I can just sort of, like, bare my soul and make work that I believe in rather than, you know, trying to make something somebody else will like.
Right. So is it the actual making of the moves and doing it, or is it kind of being in that leadership role?
Yeah. The making of the moves, like getting in there and, like, you know, you've got all these beautiful dancers looking at you, waiting for you to do something so they can learn it. And you're like, okay, well, what am I going to do? And then you think ahead, you're like, okay, I have to put this on a stage one day. Like, is the audience going to like it?
Right.
But I have to remove all of those other thoughts, all the chatter. I call it the chatter. Move the chatter out of the way and just make work that you believe in.
Are there any specific challenges that you've found being a female dancer, as a, like, I know you've observed, like, your close friendship with Nigel, and is there anything going on right now in the dance world that you think needs to change for, to make it a little easier for the women?
I always struggle with this question, because I've never personally had any, well, that's not true. I just always was outspoken about it. I find that as a female, you have to make yourself seen. And I tell this to my students. Somewhere down the line, the men became super aggressive in the dance world. Like, they're going to... Can I curse?
Yeah, go for it.
They're going to fucking go for it. Mm-hmm. And you will watch them. And I don't know if that's
like in leadership positions or just the other dancers.
Yeah, like in class, on like coming across the floor, and they are there. You can't miss the men. And then the women are just kind of like, yeah, we're dancing, but, like, you know,
we're gonna be polite. Yeah, isn't that word? It's a crippling word.
It is, and I suffer from politeness.
Me too.
But I found that, like, oh, okay, I can't be polite. I need to go with the boys. So I let the girls go, and when we go across the floor, I'm dancing with the boys because I want to dance with them. I want to have their energy. I'm still a woman, but I want to be in the same energy field that they're in. Because as a woman, because there's so many of us, it's sometimes hard to get seen. And so I made sure that I was seen. I want to be seen. So I dance like I want to be seen. And so... for the dance world in general, there's always, it's so interesting for a genre that's full of women, it's mostly directed by men.
Yeah, that's what I've heard.
So interesting. But there have been new initiatives, so like we're all the female choreographers, you know, and I love that. We're all the female directors, so that we can, like, say, you know, ladies, like, we can do that too. We can be in director and leadership roles. Like, it's not a thing. But I think that starts from, like, when you're in class and you're around the other men, like, that whole polite thing where, I could say this, but I'm not going to say it. No, I'm going to say it. Or if I don't say it, you're not going to not see me. And I teach that to my students, my female students.
That's great.
So, yeah, I know that there is a struggle, but because I've always decided that I'm going to be seen, I've never so much, like, not gotten something because I wasn't a man.
Yeah. Well, there's, I guess part of it's also that, yeah, there's just so many female dancers.
There's a lot of us.
Yeah. I mean, we have that with acting, too. There's, like, very few roles, but so many women. Mm-hmm. Is there anything, like, when you feel yourself, you're in the dark side and you need to change your day, turn your day around, or is there anything, that, tangible things that you reach for or do over and over, a certain book that you read or an album you listen to or a place you like to go?
I try to, after not getting an audition, after I let my self-loathing pass, because I let myself feel things now. I don't compartmentalize like I used to, or pretend I'm not upset. I let myself cry, and then I get dressed, and then I go take myself out to eat.
Mm-hmm.
It usually is ramen.
Comfort food.
Yes. I have a comfort food date with myself, and let the feelings pass, and then I try to go to a movie.
Yeah,
I try to sit down and lose myself in some art, and that helps. That helps me back away from the edge, back away from the cliff, to do things for myself that I really enjoy right after rejection.
I love that.
So that has helped me a lot. And then I just really try to remind myself to be kind to myself, and that most times these auditions, like, has nothing to do with you and your talent. It's just who they know, who they're looking for, what they're looking for. all things I've told my students before, but when you're in that room, it's so different.
Yeah.
So I just try to remind myself of that and then go have some food that I like, take myself to a movie, and then
move on.
Yeah. And then go to the next audition next week. Do it again.
And then I also wanted to ask if there's any works you've seen lately that you want to recommend.
Oh, like anything?
Anything, yeah.
Oh, man. Well, I saw Hamilton.
Yes.
Incredible.
The best.
Even after people have, like, hyped it up so much, it was still
It
incredible.
Deserves it, right?
You know, you go to a movie, people have hyped it up, you're like...
No, so good. So
Hamilton
good.
Totally lived up to the hype.
The choreography is great, too, right?
Yeah, choreography is great.
So good.
The book, though, I mean, Lin-Manuel...
He's incredible.
He's brilliant. And actually really inspiring.
Mm-hmm.
He wrote it and starred in it. He made himself the lead.
Yes.
And I said, you know what? He might be onto something. Speaking of putting yourself in your own work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know.
So Hamilton was dope. I loved it. I don't go to enough stuff, partially because it's so expensive. It inspired me to sort of like look for inspiration, you know, like.
I know the fact that he read that book and, oh, I see similarities here, and I could see it through this completely different lens.
Yeah.
That's incredible.
And then like, I'm going to set it to rap.
Mm-hmm.
So something I feel passionate about with this really amazing story, undertold story. Brilliant. Trust your crazy ideas. But also, like, find inspiration. It's making me, like, okay, I need to read more books. Like, I need to go to the museum.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, it's like that, what was that random art exhibit we passed when we were at Colin's bachelor party?
Oh, like the drift, what was it, driftwood?
Yeah.
Or, like, petrified wood or
yes,
something?
I took photos
that was
of
so beautiful.
Those. This piece I'm going to do for LaGuardia, we're going to make those in our bodies.
Oh, amazing.
Like, yeah. That's I took it specifically for that. I was like, ooh, this is good inspiration. But that's what I mean. I need to go to more things that, like, spark it for me. Crazy ideas will come.
Yeah. All right, well, let's go read more books.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much, Chanel. Thank you. This was such a pleasure. Listening to the Compass Podcast. I'm Leah Walsh. More episodes are coming soon. Please look for us on Facebook and iTunes. I'd like to thank the following people for their generosity. The Compass cover art is by Kim Miller, music by Brendan Spieth, audio assistance from Nick Choksi, and a special thanks to Frankie J. Alvarez. See you next time.
The Outsiders, S.E. Hinton's generation-defining novel, is now a powerful and moving Broadway hit that the New York Post is calling the best new musical of the season so far. Don't miss your chance to join Ponyboy and the Greasers and experience the classic story come to life in a whole new way. The New York Times calls it refreshing, gritty, and endlessly effective. So get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com, and of course, stay gold. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.